Got open man, DJ Moore, end zone, touchdown, touchdown Bears.
I am Jeff Joniak.
Blitz is on, down he goes, Husker.
What was it like playing for Coach Ditka?
I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Pressure coming, he's in big trouble, down he goes, Montez Sweat.
No way.
Now, Bears Etc. brought to you by Miller Lite with the voices of the Bears, Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer.
We go back in time while looking forward to what's next in this week's Bears Etc. podcast, episode 63. That would be the Jay Hilgenberg podcast with his teammate and Super Bowl winning Bears guard, Tom Thayer. I'm Jeff Joniak, and we're weeks away from drafting the next starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears on the 25th of this month. And we'll also lay out the red carpet to Canton, Ohio for Bears great Steve McMichael and Devin Hester. All this while the baseball world is popping and spinning and the NCAA men's and women's champions have been crowned. Congrats to the UConn men and the South Carolina women for capping off tremendous memorable seasons. And I know, Tom, you were really interested in women's basketball and South Carolina ran the table. Unbeaten and UConn a repeat. So some exciting stuff in the tournament. I know you were glued to it.
I was, you know, because I have so much respect for the coaches and the way they brought their coaching talents and brought that to the talent of their players. Because when I watch women's basketball, the precision of their passing, the authenticity of the game, the understanding of the angles and the intricacies of how basketball is played. And again, it reminds me of old school basketball before dunking became so prevalent in men's basketball. And I just loved what I saw. And listen, I have all the respect in the world for what the men's, finals offered. I got to say, though, I was talking to Joliet's own Terry Gannon the other day, and he played on the 1983 national championship team of North Carolina State. And they were all going down to watch North Carolina State in the finals. And so I kind of had my fingers crossed that they would win the championship because 2 years later, the Bears won the Super Bowl. And so I was hypothetically and hopefully thinking ahead during that time. But, UConn, Purdue, they did a great job. South Carolina and Iowa, they did a great job. So, a lot of great basketball there was to be watched.
City of Champions, Joliet, Illinois.
Always. Yes. I mean, it was interesting because when I was going to Notre Dame that year, North Carolina State played Notre Dame at Notre Dame. So I had a chance to meet a lot of those guys on that team through Terry. And we had another local kid from Lockport, Scott Parsich, that also played on North Carolina State. So, a lot of connective tissues there.
So our special guest this week, former Bears general manager Jerry Angelo. Unfortunately, all things being real here, I kicked the cord on the electricity, and the first part of that interview was somewhere in the metaverse somewhere, and so long gone. We did save some of it. We'll play some of that. It won't be about what we initially discussed, but he's agreed to come back next week and talk about Devin Hester. We can summarize, though. It's an honor that he's in there, that he had a chance to draft him 57th in round two. Never thought at the time that this was going to be a Hall of Fame career. A man without a position. Felt he should have stayed in college a year longer to maybe solidify being a cornerback, which Devin really wanted to play. But the excellence and what it amounted to was really pushing the team into a Super Bowl in 2006.
Well, I got to tell you, the bigger picture that I look at it, the crossroads of Devin Hester going into the Hall of Fame when he was kind of an athlete without a defined position. I think that because of Devin Hester has been in the conversation of the classes of Hall of Fames, it's continued the discussion about how can we make kickoff returns better in the NFL. And so when you look at Devin, being honored by induction into the Hall of Fame, everybody knew it, and we kind of complained about it as much as anybody during the broadcast that they somehow got to get the return game back in to the NFL game. And so I'm glad that the conversation continued to get Devin into the Hall of Fame because he deserves it. But I'm also glad that the conversation continued where they got the kickoff returned back into the NFL.
Miller Lite is our presenting sponsor of the Bears Etc. podcast. Tastes like Miller time. Go to MillerLite.com/BearsPod to find delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. And in our discussion with Jerry, which this part you won't hear, but we'll readdress it next week on the podcast, is that, yeah, it is about safety, and it is about, you know, getting it back in the game, and it is about point production from his perspective, because point totals are down, and, you know, they'd like to see that get ratcheted up. He feels the return men will be the return men. Maybe it'll be a bigger return man, and it's an actual line of scrimmage play now. It's a play from scrimmage the way it'll be designed. So that, to me, is intriguing, and we discussed this a couple weeks back. It's going to be an additional 1,600 plays of NFL football, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But what I didn't get a chance to bring up with Jerry, and maybe we can touch on it next week, is that, you know, why do we have to tweak the game to have the point total be up or down? Why can't we just play football?
Well, so the antagonistic part of me about the kickoff return, I was saying, okay, if you take kickoff return out of it, then you should cut the salary of the special teams coaches by one quarter, because it's the most difficult play in special teams to organize a successful blocking scheme. And so when you saw these guys that were great returners, it was really, you know, you got to give the special teams coaches throughout the history of the NFL all the credit they deserve because of the difficulty of it. So now I'm going to give them their salaries back, because now I'm interested to really see the reconstruction of a blocking scheme when they have the new setup of the kickoff return. And to me, in some of the ways that we used our blocking schemes on our kickoff return back in the day, you could work with another player. I worked a lot with Jim Morrissey. And so when you could kind of set up the guys that were coming downfield just by eye contact, and you knew you were setting them up for a blindside block by your teammate, I think you're going to have a construction of really interesting returns designed by the special teams coaches in the NFL.
So if, in fact, this is going to be looked upon as a scrimmage play, in essence, are you going to involve now Chris Morgan, the offensive line coach? Are you going to you're going to involve, like, from a schematic point of view, will you get their influence at all?
No. Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to design some cross blocking schemes. I'm going to introduce where my point of return is going to be and move a body across the formation. I'm going to change different angles because we're so close to each other. You got to think, being in the wedge back in my kickoff return, I was retreating at the kick of the ball, setting up about 11 yards away from the returner, and then initiating our movement towards the pursuers. Nowadays, with the kickoff, the ball is caught, and now you get to start your confrontation. I just think that there are super intelligent special teams coaches all throughout the NFL, and I think you're going to be able to devise those different angles of attack to create that instant of opportunity for a returner. I'm not looking for you to sustain a block for 4 seconds. I'm looking for you to get the right angle on the pursuer to create that crease to watch an explosion upfield.
I can't wait to see it. I really can't.
Me neither. I can't wait
to see it. It's going to be a lot of interesting plays drawn up over the course of the season. Somebody's going to do something really intriguing. It's going to be like the tush push became something. Somebody's going to do something that everybody else is going to try and copy, and it's going to become a whole play, a thing.
Jeff, consider this as well. So when we're sitting there at training camp and they have the different days that are dedicated to different segments of special teams, you're going to be able to do these things live. You're not going to do it like the old kickoff return where we're just going to run downfield and we're not going to have any contact because we want to keep it innocent. Now you're going to kick off, and we're going to have actual live kickoff returns at practice because the impact is significantly less, and the guys that are included on the core special teams, those are the guys that we need to get the most realistic reps before it actually happens.
Have you discussed this with some special teams coaches across the league?
I have not. I just because watching the other leagues that they use this style of kickoff return, I was thinking about that back in the day of in practices, that they're actually going to be able to do these more real. They're going to have to do them more realistically live to allow the players to get used to it. And because of the proximity of the pursuers and the blockers are so close to each other, you could have these rugby style of plays drawn up. You could have these type of tacklers against these blockers. And so I think it's going to be fun in training camp when we have the, you know, the mid part of practice when they're going kickoff return.
Tom, you better be paying attention. You know, no more coffee breaks at training camp.
Oh, no. I drink the coffee before I get there. I'm not a coffee drinker. You're the one.
I'm awful.
You have coffee made for you and handed to you when we get there. Don't deny it.
Well, you know, let's talk about that for a minute, because you used to really get mad at me when I would bring I'm a guy who likes to have a hot cup of Joe, and I'm a stroller. I like strolling out there with my coffee on the practice field, and you would burn a hole in me with those eyes. You don't bring the coffee to the practice field. So I keep it up in the viewing suite when we have to do our talks with different guests over the course of training camp on the daily. But I don't do that anymore because, you know, you told me that should be outlawed. That was not proper.
If I was an active player, I would come and I would slap it on you. I really would.
The late Mark Hatley used to stand under the goalpost at every practice with his large big gulp. First thing in the morning. Yes,
He's the GM.
I know, I'm just...
you know, if I was an active player and you were sitting there sipping coffee, I would slap it right out of your
hands. Let me ask you this question. Did coaches back in your day, did anybody smoke cigarettes on the field?
Yes.
They did?
Yes.
You got a coach?
Dick Stanfield used to smoke.
During practice?
Yeah, I used to smoke during meetings, you know, when we are in the meeting room for a couple hours. And, you know, Jim Hannafin, the ex-offensive line coach of the Rams and the Atlanta Falcons and other teams. There was players, when I was in the USFL, there were multiple players that smoked and went into the locker room at halftime to make sure that they could have a couple cigarettes in the bathroom during halftime.
Unbelievable. When it's time to tackle some game day deals, then go with the grocer who's been a part of Chicago since 1899, Jewel Osco, the official grocery store of the Chicago Bears. A couple of new additions, and there have been plenty on the business side in the front office of the Chicago Bears as a franchise. And one is the hiring of Krista Whitaker, Executive VP of Legal Business Affairs and Chief Legal Officer. She comes from the Miami Heat, Tommy, and will closely work with Bears President and CEO Kevin Warren, a Texas A&M grad, and Stanford Law. Also, Andrea Zopp, Senior Advisor, Legal and Business Affairs, a distinguished career in multiple executive leadership roles in the public and private sector. Harvard undergrad, Harvard Law School. Some really impressive women joining the Bears franchise in that side of the fence as they continue to work towards getting a stadium. There are new wrinkles to business. It's not just here. It's global. And so every little bit is going to help the Chicago Bears moving forward as Kevin Warren reimagines the front office of the franchise.
Hey, the education of the NFL never stops, because it seems like there's always something that's in motion that needs to be figured out factually and with great intelligence. And when you look at those education resumes, it's pretty impressive.
It is, no question. So welcome to Krista and welcome to Andrea. So let's get into the interview. We're going to pick it up on the fly with Jerry Angelo. The first part, obviously, not able to be aired, so we'll have to revisit. And he's been kind enough to join us again next week to talk specifically about Devin Hester. We got into many topics, as three guys who love football are going to. And we picked it up about where the money's going at the guard position in the National Football League. Here's part of our conversation with the former Bears general manager. I've been tweaking Tom because Tom, you know, had a great career at guard. He was a hell of a right guard, a Super Bowl champion, never missed a snap, never missed a game. But the salaries are a bit different at guard in 2024. That's where the skyrocket to combat what everybody's doing on the interior now, and that quick point of tack between the line of scrimmage and the closest to get to the quarterback is inside. The guards today are making a lot of money, Jerry.
Yeah, you know, Jeff, it used to be left tackle, then it became tackle, then it became tackle guard. Center, he's still the run of the litter, so to speak. But the guard and tackle, if you're a premium player, you know, they see him the same now. And they should. You know, when I think of, you know, Canton, tackles are going to the Hall of Fame, what do you think, Tom? Pass pro guys, right? When I think of the guards are going to Canton, run blockers.
Yeah.
So they each have tremendous value, you know, in an offense. You know, a little more show and time with the offensive tackles. They're on islands, more to be made like a pass rusher. But no, the value of a guard to me is every bit as essential to good line play as a tackle. And as I said, we, you know, the best lines that, you know, I've been around, we always had, you know, good guard play. We couldn't run an offense, you know, without it. Particularly, again, Jeff, I go back to if you don't have a franchise quarterback, right? So, yeah, the you know, as you see in free agencies, they're dinosaurs. There's not enough college linemen back in my day, and it still holds true today, to feed 32 teams. You can't. The colleges can't produce, you know, the players. When we were 28 teams, we were okay. We were good. But when we went to 32, Jeff, that position really, to me, sunk in terms of the talent level. Mm. You know, and teams were just band-aiding the position and grab-bagging. And that's why you see it in free agency. I've never seen so mediocre players, you know, that are making so much money. I mean, some of these players just, you know, they're on the high side of average. And look at their salaries. It's not because of their play. It's because of the value of what they are to teams.
You know, Jerry, in the 1983 draft when I came out, there was five quarterbacks taken in the first round. And two of the premier guys, obviously, were Elway and Dan Marino. If you put them in these modern-day quarterback classes, do you scout them and evaluate them differently, or do you try to fit them into the system that you want to run if they're less RPO guys and more passing type of guys?
Tom, I'd say this still holds true today, and I, you know, I will swear by it. Everybody, if you're in my position, you're always looking, you know, at that position. And I would tell our scouts, evaluate every quarterback in your area and make sure that you know them. And when the draft's over with, anybody that we had on the board at the quarterback position that we said could make it, you need to watch them in the summertime. You can't do enough work on the quarterback position. But saying that, Tom, I think these tenets hold true. And you, Jeff, you and Tom agree or disagree. But I think the number one criteria for that position, Tom, is toughness. You know, mental and physical toughness. You cannot play that position without it. Number two is accuracy, not arm strength, accuracy, because most of the throws are coming around 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. So you've got to be able to hit these receiver, the moving targets. That's where you're going to get your after catch. The other one, and, you know, everybody talks about it, like, you know, poise, emotional intelligence, however you want to call it. How does he act in the unrehearsed? How does it, and it doesn't mean make a great play. It might be taking the sack, throwing the ball out of bounds, not doing something stupid with the ball. And you can call it emotional intelligence. I always define it as poise. And then lastly, leadership, Tom, critical to the position. And what's leadership mean? Hard worker, hardworking guy. You know, he had to have the respect of the locker room. And the only way you're going to get that is through your work ethic and through your toughness. So, four of those criteria that I use for myself, three were intangible. I think that the position is a character position in the NFL. It's always been that way. I saw a documentary on Bart Starr. It brought a tear to my eye. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. What an incredible story. But again, that's why, you know, it's the hardest position in sport to play, because the intangibles, along with the intangibles, are rare, and so few people, you know, have them. Hey, listen, I tried. I tried my best to get them. And they're just, you know, they're rare. But I really believe this, Tom, Jeff, you've got to have those four criteria to be successful in the National Football League.
Well, we hear a lot about the Bears tied to Caleb Williams as a projected number one overall pick here in 16 days. So with that being said, how do you, as a general manager and as a department, prepare your team for what looks like is going to be a day one rookie starting quarterback and ease that transition?
Who's the backup?
Right now it's Tyson Bagent.
Okay, well, I heard a lot of good things about
yes.
him. I didn't see him play a lot, but I think it's important who's in the room if I'm taking a quarterback in the first round. Like we had Josh McCown. I mean, he was great, a great guy to have in the room. So my focus is who's in the room. And I like the backup there in Chicago. He's wish he had a little more experience, but he seems like he's got a lot in terms of his intangibles and, will be a good fit. I would look at a veteran of sorts. I think that's going to be very, very important. Coaching, we can't minimize coaching. I'd look at that real, what's your plan for him? You know, we have to have a plan. It's not like, well, let's throw him out there and let's see what he can do. We have to work and operate within the plan. I think history tells you, Jeff, that the more he's able to watch, the better his chances of success. You look at, Hasselbeck when he was up in Green Bay. You look at the Jordan Love kid, you look at Aaron Rodgers, they sat a long time and were very benefit. I think percentageally speaking, quarterbacks that have that window of time, their chances of success are going to be better. In the old days, Tom, tell me, when you drafted a quarterback in the first round, he might be lucky to, starting his third year. You own the players then, so you could be more patient. But I think that's still, very, very important. Who's in that room. It's a tough position and, nobody has the formula, but you want to be sound in your approach. And I think you have to look at these components that I'm touching on, Jeff.
Yeah, you look at quarterbacks, unfortunately, they get drafted at the highest in the first round are sometimes going to the worst supporting cast. Now you're asking that quarterback to go out and compete like he's at Alabama with a five-star class of athletes when that's really not what you're offered in the team you're going to. And then can you stay healthy long enough in order to allow them to build the roster so you have that supporting cast around you? And, sometimes quarterbacks are treated the most unfairly in their route to success because of that.
Or Tom and Jerry, as you mentioned, Jerry. Tom and Jerry, I just caught that myself. This is no cartoon. Like you mentioned, the turnover on coaches, I believe since 2021, they've all overturned already. And so at offensive coordinator. So now you got to hear the Bears have another offensive coordinator. You got a passing game coordinator. You've got a run game coordinator/offensive line coach. You've got a quarterback coach. You've got, an assistant quarterback coach who played in the league as a veteran, Ryan Griffin here. So they're trying to build a lot of people to, as you say, enhance the most difficult position in sports, the quarterback position. But, once these guys get a name for themselves, then now they're head coaching candidates.
Right.
No, it's a cycle.
Yeah, the Jeff and the dynamic is tough. And, the other thing, Jeff, and I learned this in Chicago, Chicago's that market, very tough, very tough, very hard for a quarterback to be successful in Chicago. That's a fact. I saw it firsthand. It's tough. They really, they're on you. It's not like when I was in Tampa or other places. It's very tough, with the scrutiny that you have. And, when players or coaches tell you, well, we don't read or listen to that bull crap. They listen, they read, they hear. If they don't, their family, their friends are telling them. It's tough emotionally. So that's why I say you need to let the guy settle. Let him settle in. Let him get to know the ropes a little bit. Help him, the thinking. I would – if I were coming in, I'd say, what are we going to ask him to do? The less he has to do post-snap, the better his chances are to develop. See what I'm saying? Yeah. Let's keep those reads as simple as we can, knowing it is a complicated game, but let's not overcomplicate it for him. You know, let's talk about that. You know, let's be an efficient offense. We don't necessarily have to come out, you know, and put 30, 35 up on the board because we got the number one pick in the draft. You know, that's not my goal, me personally. You know, I want to make sure that we, you know, are going to build a good foundation, and then in time, he'll reach his ceiling, okay? But we got to help him. We got to do everything we can, and we can't think what, Tom? Desperately, okay? Desperately. You know, people that think desperately usually think stupidly, okay? And I've been there. I know that firsthand. You know? So
we're not going to ask you when you got desperate. We won't ask for any examples. Last thing, though, I want to touch on Julius Peppers, and then we'll let you go, Jerry, more than kind with your time. I forgot about this, and Tom, I don't know if you remember this, but in the 2006 collective bargaining agreement, there was a clause that there was no salary cap in 2010. Remember that? I forgot.
I didn't.
So no salary cap in 2010. So I remember NFL Network flew me out to talk about the Bears free agent haul in 2010, and Julius Peppers obviously heading into the Hall of Fame and started what turned out to be an impactful few years with the Bears before he went elsewhere. But NFC Championship game, and I remember sitting in that room with a lot of different people just sending me a lot of arrows about, is this really going to help the Bears? What this? And, you know, we were in the NFC Championship game and a whisker away from being in the Super Bowl. But how impactful was Julius from your seat and just his overall career as a former, I think, a number two pick in the draft?
Yeah, I think, you know, Jeff, I thought one of the things that we did really, really well, and I credit our pro department, Bobby DePaul, Morocco Brown, Kevin Turks, we did a great job in free agency. If you look at the free agents we had, that we really paid money to. You know, I'm not just talking about, you know, any free agent, you know, but look at, you know, contracts that were lucrative. I think we had a really high batting average. And I know we did. And Julius, you know, given, you know, he had some things being said about him, you know, basketball player playing football, you know, great talent. But, you know, could he go 15 rounds, so to speak? You're going to give him the money. What are you going to get? You know, so all those things were in my mind. And we did an inordinate amount of work on him, particularly our coaches. I really give credit to our coaches, too, in this one. And we were sold that this guy loved football, you know, his work ethic, everything. And we knew the impact he was have. Jeff, this guy was special. I'd never seen the things, you know, that he could do. And I've been around some pretty good players now, but I had never seen, you know, guys do what he do at his size. He was rare, probably the best pure athlete, you know, I've ever seen. And now, hey, I'm looking at Urlacher too when I say this, okay? But Peppers, you won't see this. He's a generational talent. So, you know, he was a very good player for us. The thing that really struck me when I look back at him is humility. The kid, he was just so humble about, you know, himself, and, you know, a lot like Urlacher that way. Just humble, you know, and I couldn't be any happier for him, too. These guys are not only, you know, great players going to Canton, they're great people, which is, you know, which is a good story for football.
No question. Need more great stories like that. You going to be there? In Canton?
Jeff, I don't know that. Jeff.
Come on.
Yeah. No, it's too close to Youngstown. I get to Canton. Now I'm close to Youngstown. And I don't know that Youngstown's, that's the best place for me to be right now. I'm only teasing. I love Youngstown, Ohio. And I love Canton. the Canton Bulldogs.
Yeah, yeah. But hey, one of your own and going to be enshrined in Canton. It's got to feel good even to this day.
Yeah, real good, Jeff.
Hey, this was fun. Appreciate it so much, Jerry. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, good seeing you guys. Tom, good seeing you. And Jeff, always a pleasure, buddy.
Thanks, Jerry.
We're brought to you by PNC, official bank of the Bears, and Vizzy Heart Seltzer. Flavors for every vibe. Celebrate responsibly. Molson Coors Beverage Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Jeff and Tom wrapping things up on the podcast. Oh, he says the same lines as he did when he was here, right? They just ring true. It takes me back with Jerry. Always love Jerry.
You know what's weird is any ex-player, any ex-member of the front office, it's always so refreshing to talk to them once they're out of the seat.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with our guy, Jason McKee. You know, we covered him as a player and you kind of have a different approach. And now we're workmates together and you just love his personality and you love what he's become. And it's a great opportunity to talk to Jerry off after all the years of seriousness that every time you see him, that's what the approach was. It was always professional.
A couple things I want to get over here before we wrap things up. Montez Sweat was on Chris Long's podcast, the Green Light podcast that he does every week. Asked if he prefers a new defensive tackle out of this draft or another edge. He picked edge, not because that's a tough decision, but another guy on the outside to free him up. He says he's not losing to the Packers this year. They were talking about the Packers and how, you know, they're going to be a tough team to, and he wasn't having it. So I like that. That's refreshing. And he loved up TJ Edwards, who he was shocked that Philadelphia let him go in free agency. So I like hearing that from a veteran who was dumped in here, finished the 9 games strong, dominated in those 9 games, and is a big reason why there's so much arrow up on the Bears defense.
You know, one thing about having an edge rusher is it thins out the protection. Now it's got the direction protection going in 2 different areas. Say we are playing against Reggie White. I could sit in there and help on the interior defensive lineman, and then Jay would come over and take control, and then I could go out and help Van Horn on Reggie White. And so if you got 2 guys that are playing next to each other of dominance, that you can always have 3 guys on 2. If you have edge rushers at the opposite end of the rushing paths, then you got to spread things out. So I can see why Montez would say that.
All right. The reported visits, the top 30 visits at Hallis Hall, include a bunch of wide receivers, and we know a lot of them, reportedly. Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, Xavier Worthy, the fastest man at the combine, the 4.21 40 from Texas, and others. Edges, Leitu Latu from UCLA, Dallas Turner, Alabama, Chop Robinson of Penn State, and then offensive linemen. Interior and tackle. Tyler Guyton of Oklahoma is one of them. Jackson Powers Johnson, the center from Oregon. Graham Barton from Duke. Zach Frazier, the interior offensive lineman from West Virginia. And a couple tight ends, Brock Bowers from Georgia and Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. So that doesn't mean that this is where they're headed, but I think we all agree, though. Offensive line, edge, wide receiver. If they keep it at 9, or even if they trade down out of 9 and pick up an extra pick or 2, seems to be where most of the analysts are looking at where the Bears will go after the likely selection of Caleb Williams at number 1. Any of these guys stick out to you?
Yeah, Dallas Turner. I really like his get off. I like his length. I like his ability to get around the corner. He's got good bend ability. He's got good feet work. I like the UCLA kid. I think when you look at his athleticism in some of the drills that they did at the combine, not necessarily the 40, that's what I pay attention to.
Yeah.
And I think he's a really clever athlete. Obviously, you named all those receivers. I don't think he could go wrong with any of them.
100%, right? You can't go wrong.
So I wish I could do a little bit more in-depth about the background, about their work ethic, about their commitment to the sport, about their commitment to the sport after they're gifted millions of dollars. Because, man, that changes a lot of, just factors about guys, you know. And so – there's, you know, other things that I, you know, you kind of can take away from a player if you have an inside the building conversation.
Game day snacking calls for good foods. Chunky guacamole made with Hass avocados, tomatoes, onion, cilantro, and a squeeze of lime juice. Score some today at your local grocery store. Game day is guac day. I know that players are very particular about their helmets, and the NFL and the NFLPA have been working, the NFL awarding grants for companies to research the most health-related and safe helmets you can possibly get for the sport. But I just saw this. They're introducing 5 new helmets for the season that tested better than any helmet ever worn in the NFL, a big advancement in helmet safety innovation. And so a record 12 new helmet models eligible for players to wear for the season. Some are not. Some have been eliminated. So if you want to play in the NFL, you got to pick one of these 12. And now this year, there's more position-specific helmets. I know this is probably sounding crazy to you, but it's more than ever before. 8 new position-specific models introduced this season to mitigate impacts more likely to be sustained by individual positions. They don't name the positions, but they were introduced to the offensive defensive lines a year ago, if I'm not mistaken. So all of this is constantly evolving every year, trying to improve this. As a former player who was probably pretty particular on what he wore in a different time and place, obviously, with technology being what it is, how do you feel about this as a player, a modern-day player, looking back as a former player?
You know, I'm glad they give players a lot of different options, whatever makes them feel the safest. But, you know, there is, unfortunately for me, being a bald guy, and I sweat so profusely that I needed a helmet that stayed above my head. Because when I tried to go to the latest technology, and they had this system called the PAC-3, and it was a series of sponges that was covered in plastic. And when I got sweaty, it slipped so badly, it'd come down and break the bridge of my nose.
Wow.
And so I couldn't wear that helmet anymore, so I had to go, and I got introduced to a bike helmet. And then it had a bladder that fit around your head, and you could put air in it to keep it floating kind of above the impact zone. So sometimes you have to do what, according to you, best fits your head style and your hairstyle and everything else that goes along with it.
And what's the impact of the weight of that helmet on you?
Minimal. You really don't pay attention to it. You know, I was watching a thing today on TV about the King's Guards. And they wear a helmet year-round that's in between 8 and 13 pounds. They said they have the strongest necks in the world. I think that's one of the things as a young football player as you develop through time is you develop those neck muscles where you don't feel the weight of the helmet. It's more of a protector rather than something that you're paying attention to the weight.
So let me get this straight. You are talking about England?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they got helmets that are made out of actual bear skin, and they weigh in between 8 and 13 pounds. They wear them year-round, no matter if the temperatures are severely cold or severely hot. And I think of what is the, you know, when you look at the race car drivers and you look at football players, and then I introduce to that type of helmet, you know, it's amazing what, you know, what you have, what's expected of you.
You never know what you're going to learn from Tom Thayer and the Bears Etc. podcast. That's why it's Etc. That is only a Tom Thayer thought.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I you know.
I thought you were talking about, when you said Kings, I'm thinking, is he talking about the LA Kings hockey team or
the Royal family. And, you know, you don't volunteer for that. You're chosen for that. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just like you're chosen for this. Tastes like Miller time. Hey, celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces.
Unfortunately, Jeff, you have to be above 5'10". So
I have no shot.
You can be king, but you can't be a king of guard.
At 5'7" and a half on a good day. All right, that's going to wrap us up. We appreciate the time of Jerry Angelo, the former Bears general manager, and we appreciate you listening. Please subscribe now to the Chicago Bears official app, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. For Tom, I'm Jeff. Thanks for listening, everybody, and bear down.